Thank you for listening to episode 13-2 of the Tech Gaming Podcast. In this post E3 episode, we got some analysis of the big show, we got some impressions, indie outlook, and trivia. So who's ready to get things started?
Me!
Yay! Me! Yeah.
Let's introduce ourselves. I am Robert Desert Eagle Allen, and along with me tonight, Sage Samarage Morris Green.
Hello!
Jeremy Lawman Lamont.
I'm post E3.
Super post. And we got Eric Blue Swim.
Hentai is justice!
Robert, do you know what I just realized?
What?
Blue is the only person whose last name you do not add after the end of his moniker.
I know.
He likes the mystery.
He's only got one name. He's like Madonna.
Or Cher.
Or Sting.
Sting.
Or Sting.
So in the interest of time, I thought I'd combine reader mail with E3 talk, since there was a healthy amount of overlap there. So our first question tonight comes from Golden Gopher. And he asks, after listening to Robert and Jeremy be all nice and take the journalistic high road with the Xbox One, I want to hear your personal opinion. So you can pick only one machine to pre-order, Xbox One or PS4. Which is it? And please don't be all polite. Yeah, he also wants to hear from our angry co-hosts, Sage and Blue, as well.
I don't know if we can bring that back. That was intense.
Yeah, that was.
Can we handle that?
Yeah,
should I kick things off?
Yeah.
I'll say Golden Gopher. I think that's a really good question. No, I'm kidding. I'll ditch the PR. Ask it. Anyway.
I'm glad that you asked. It does support pre-orders.
Well, one of the things, the holy grail of marketing is having a relationship with a brand. And it's what every company wants for their product to be intertwined with a person's life, to express yourself through a commodity that they can sell to you. And one of the most important requisites for a interpersonal relationship is trust. And I think it's the same thing in branding. Now, here's where I drop the bomb. I don't trust Microsoft. And you might think that this is a recent stance on the Xbox One DRM. And no, this is something that's been really cultivated over years. I remember back in 2005, old Jay Allard, he wove the story of Velocity Girl. And that was the casual gamer who didn't have the drive to play Tony Hawk, but she wanted to be a part of the Xbox family by designing stickers, what have you, skate parks, clothing, soundtracks. And except for Forza's skins, they were never really, which, you know, didn't use a real currency. They were an amazing addition. This was never really realized. 4 years later, we saw Milo. You guys know how that went. This demonstrated the power of Kinect. The little English boy could read facial expressions. He could interact with users. He could scan in drawings. And he interacted with the person.
Drawings.
Like 2 feet away from the device. And all these things never happened. Again, empty promises. We got a device that couldn't read emotions and could barely track my own left leg. Moving back to 2007, Microsoft, you know, had all the kinds of problems with the Xbox 360 red ringing. At the time, I remember Peter Moore and others were saying that the machine was well within the norm of this 3-5 breakdown rate. I don't even think they used the word breakdown, whatever PR uses.
The attach rate?
No, something, some other kind term. And I remember warranty providers.
Oh, failures. Okay, I'm sorry.
Yeah, you don't want to use the word failure. It's
yeah, right.
Other term.
Turnover.
I remember Square Trade put the number closer to 25%. And I think Game Informer, they had a number that was close to 50%. And I know I went through about four or five 360s. Now, Microsoft, I'm sure they must have known about this problem. They were probably getting thousands of machines. But they stood by the nothing is wrong story until they were forced to cave in under a lot of pressure. And so right now, moving forward, we don't know the full story of the Xbox One's plans. Reports have stated that the unlimited family sharing was intended to be a 30 to 60 minute demo period, which was kind of surprising. The purported cloud, which was going to give the Xbox One an edge, isn't being talked about either. Microsoft, they offered an interview before E3. And I took them up later for clarification after the DRM removal. They never got back to me. And I know we're not the biggest site, but they haven't really clarified their position with any, not even with the top-tier outlet. And for me, I think that's needed before people spend $500 on an unseen, unplayed product. Which leads me to Sony. I don't think they're free of transgression either, between failing to inform people of PSN hacking. And I think last year they promised over 60 new Vita titles, and people clocked them in. They delivered about 40. They haven't exactly instilled confidence. They're a little bit better than Microsoft. But that said, my advice is to save your money after launch. Like most every system ever released, I expect a handful of launch titles and then a dry period. So I give, you know, PS4 just a minor thumbs up, but really hold off on buying a new system. Golden Gopher. So that's my rant. No ass kissing there.
All right. Well, let me just weigh in then. I'm pretty clearly, I don't think it's going to be any surprise, I'm pretty clearly entrenched in the PlayStation ecosystem at this point.
Don't call it the system.
It's the buzzword now. And it really, I think it really is appropriate too. I don't think it's the wrong kind of word. I mean, especially with, I don't know about Xbox, because the Microsoft ecosystem is what, Windows?
Zoom.
The kin.
Oh, fuck soon.
You know, so from an Xbox standpoint, I don't know, but PlayStation, the Sony and the PlayStation, I think, especially in the last couple of years, I mean, really in the last couple of years, when it came to PlayStation Plus and the Vita and the way that they are folding those all together into one sort of cohesive package, I think once you get into that, if you have to pick one, I think it's kind of hard, and I don't know. Maybe there are some people who are really tied to their Xbox gamer score. I mean that, and I'm not going to judge those people because you know what, we all have our, you know, our little fetishes. But I could see people, you know, wanting to stick with that, but I just feel like there's so much more to consume, you know, when it comes to Sony. I think aside from all of the nonsense with the Xbox 180, you know, the used games. Like I was never really bothered by that, and I think I went on record on the last show. It didn't really bother me personally. I didn't feel like it was necessarily unreasonable. That's just my personal feeling. So from that standpoint, I wasn't. And even the price, to be honest with you, it is a little weird to me how people can look at $100 difference and be like, oh my god, look at this. It's so $100. They're gonna lose forever. I mean, there are a lot of products out there that'll cost you, you know, $500 that, you know, pretty good tech products. And I believe them that, you know, that price for, I mean, a low end PC, the price of a low end PC, you can have a, you know, top tier console experience for the next 6 years, 7 years, whatever it's going to be. So I don't even really have any problems with that stuff, but I just feel like somewhat to what Deagle was saying about trust, I feel, a little bit more about, you know, my personal criterion is how much I feel like I'm respected as a consumer. I think that's kind of been my, the thing that I've talked about before. And I still feel like Sony, and maybe it's because, you know, they did not do as well this last gen in terms of sales or whatever, which I still don't even know. I don't know if that is something that a consumer should really care about that much, but they are really going the extra mile, you know, with, you know, like I said, PlayStation Plus and the way they're reaching out to a wide variety of new developers and, you know, even the vision that they have for what the PlayStation 4 is going to be. I mean, I feel like, especially at this point, honestly, I felt like Microsoft should have stuck by their guns to some extent with their digital policies and the things that they were going to be doing, because now they've walked that all back, and what do they have left? Like, I don't even really know what their mission statement is for the Xbox One anymore, unless it's TV, 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 sports.
Do they still have the cloud? Power of the cloud?
They do have the cloud, but the funny thing, well, here's the thing. So they don't require any digital connection other than you have to connect initially. Mm-hmm. But they do not have, from what I understand, a 24-hour check-in period. They have no check-in period, and your games will still all work. And on one hand, it's like, yay, hooray. But on the other hand, the thing that you were talking about earlier, their cloud thing that they were going to be doing, they at Microsoft are not talking about it so much, but the guys over at Respawn have been talking about it with respect to Titanfall and how they're going to be doing some offloading of computing and, you know, something of that nature. So they are communicating that. But now that that's no longer a thing, it kind of becomes almost a, like an aftermarket peripheral, right? Like you can't guarantee to those developers that every user is going to have the same connectivity or the same capabilities. And when you're building a game that is sort of based on, you know what, we're going to be streaming AI, or we're going to be, yeah, like what now are they going to have to do to accommodate that or to account for that? On the other hand, PS4, you know, they're not doing anything of that nature. But to me, I feel like the vision behind PS4 was, you know, a lot more about the sharing, you know, the streaming, the Gaikai that they're planning on doing, you know, essentially just the products that they're selling and that they're going to allow you to consume in a certain way. And that seems to remain intact to me. And I just feel like there's more interesting stuff going on over in the Sony camp this gen. The other thing is, and I don't disagree, I have never pre-ordered any console ever. I've gotten some consoles day one, but I've never pre-ordered anything. I have pre-ordered a PlayStation 4 with the camera and with an extra controller, partly because I can finance that. Like, I think part of this is the, you know, the value proposition, the time value of money. I can actually pay that off and finance it over time and just get the expense out of the way. I feel like at this point, if I'm ever going to adopt a platform, I might as well do it right up front, defray the cost of buying it, get the games as they come out. You know, I've already got a Vita, so there's going to be some, you know, additional, you know, crossover there for me. So I'm
going.
They're
calling it like the PlayStation 4 in your pocket, I believe.
Yeah, well, they're doing basically mandatory remote play for all titles, and that's remote play within a local network. I think I'm sure you can probably do it on a wide area network. The PSP could do it. Yeah, I mean, like Robert said, there are a lot of promises made in all corners of the arena. So you can't really count your chickens before you stream your content. But there's at least that. I mean, they've at least said, you know, the Vita is going to be involved in some form. I have a Vita. I have a PS Plus account. They've already talked about free games, free PS4 games day one. They're going to have for their first launch title, the Drive Club. I guess there's a PS Plus version, so it's probably, you know, not quite the same as retail, but heck, you know what? It's at least something to begin with. That's the closest to a pack-in that I've seen
next
in a console
nothing,
in a long time.
Honestly, I played it, and it was pretty bad. It was worse than most PS3.
Yeah, I have no idea. I mean, that's the thing. You have no idea. And honestly, you even have no idea once you find your one killer app. I kind of feel like the killer app is a little bit of a myth at this point. Like, are there any system sellers? You can basically say, am I going to play the new Halo for $500? You know, well, no. But if you really want to play it that much, you might as well. Like I said, I figure I trust the platform enough that there will eventually be, even if there aren't games at launch, which, you know, Killzone is one that I plan on picking up. Yeah, I still don't know about Knack. A lot of people who saw Knack really liked it, but I'm still not quite getting.
Yeah, I wasn't sold on it. It was kind of slow, and I know it's still early, but the frame rate was.
Yeah, I think it'll be the. What was the Xbox 360 game?
Cameo.
Cameo. It's going to be the Cameo of the PS4. So you'll look back on it and be like, oh, that wasn't so good. But a lot of people who have seen it, I've also heard it said, and this has piqued my interest, that it is going to be the Pikmin of the PS4. So that speaks to me. But anyway, so I'm getting that for the purposes of, like I said, defraying the cost of adoption. Even if you wait for price drops, I mean, what's that going to be? $100 in 3 years? It's just, I don't know. I guess you could wait that long. And me, speaking as a person who has piles and piles of backlog, I totally do not need
I think
this
price
thing.
Drops are big on the software side, not so much on the hardware.
Yeah,
you wait a year, and there'll be some games
that are like half off or something.
Bucks, yeah.
Yeah, that's the thing. So for me, typically, my criterion has been wait for the first buy two, get one sale or something like that. This time, though, like I said, I'm at least getting the console. I know I'm going to get it eventually. Might as well get it and have it and be ready. And then as the PS Plus titles come out, or, you know, sales here and there or whatever, you know, maybe even buy a full price game or two, I'll be ready for that. So I just don't have.
It didn't floor me.
You know what?
It felt a little, the input lag was going back to Killzone 2. And so,
see, but the thing is, people. And I tell you what, I mean, I don't mean to turn this into a Killzone discussion, but the thing that people liked about Killzone 2 at the time was the heft of it, right? Like, oh my god, big guns. And in Killzone 3, they kind of got rid of that. It was like, okay, we're just going to swing around these giant chain guns. And I wonder if that's what you're talking about, input lag. Like, maybe they're going back to that. I don't know. But
I think after it came out, they called it heft. To me, it felt like input
lag. But it was kind of.
You pressed left, and then tenth of a second later, it starts moving.
Yeah, well, anyway, the thing is that you could say that about, I mean, someone could be really excited about something, someone else could be really not sure. excited about something, but like I said, at this juncture, I plan to adopt that console, I plan to make it, of the two, it'll definitely be my primary one. Xbox One, I don't know when that one is gonna, there are some games that they showed at E3 that I was, you know, vaguely interested in, but I really believe, I think, more in the platform of PS4 at this point, so...
I'll also give Sony credit. Most of the inside the some of the rooms where you could play PS4, they were running on PS4 hardware, and for the Xbox One, it was all running on PCs.
Xbox
One hardware, and they said,
don't defend Microsoft. They have fucked up all over the place.
they
do not have any Xbox Ones on the show floor.
That's not true, Robert. That's not true. They had one at the Turtle Beach headset demo booth, which is hilarious. Awesome. Yeah.
Really?
Which is hilarious because it's not, well, it looked like it was on. I mean, that could have been a trick. Like, it might not have actually been running anything, you know what I mean?
It was just a cardboard box with a wire.
No, the actual machine was sitting there, and it had, because they were talking about one of their
Microsoft rep told me that there were no Xbox Ones on the show floor.
Well, either that rep was an idiot, not the most surprising thing.
How much can you trust Microsoft reps at this point?
Right, exactly.
Okay, point taken.
or Robert, he meant for gaming, because there was no... there wasn't a lot of... I think that... I can't quite remember if they were running a game on that, or like a video kind of thing that you could... Because the point was to test the headphone quality, not gaming. So
it was a big VHS player.
No!
It was just running a video all day long.
No.
TV.
You know what's funny, Jeremy, is that I have never, the only console system I've ever, like, pre-ordered at all was under Nintendo. I've never, and I've shown up first day and gotten in line at, like, 4 a.m. I did that to get a Wii U. I've never pre-ordered any of the Xboxes, and I've never even had a PlayStation ever. And I am now completely switching, like, I'm pretty set to get a PlayStation 4, I mean, Golden Gopher, if I had to pick one, if I had to, I'd pick the PS4, but typically I don't pre-order systems, sort of for the same reasons that, Jeremy, you are getting one. Like, I don't have the money to really pre-order one unless I know that for sure I must have this system, and I'm not entirely compelled that I must have this system right away. So to me, waiting until the first gens come out and making sure there haven't been any issues, which is something I'm more inclined to need to do for Microsoft, because I trust Sony not to have the same kind of problems that Microsoft has. I don't need a PS4 right away. Like, I can wait and make sure that they've got everything worked out and then get one. But if I had to pre-order one, I'd probably get the PS4, because Xbox One is just such a fucking douche cannon machine. And everything about it, I mean, it may be, to be fair, maybe part of it was the way they present it at the press conference, because they were a bunch of douchebags about it. But, I mean, everything that they presented just made me feel like this is a box made for frat boys who want to act like assholes. Like, I didn't feel... And then the other thing, too, I mean, part of it is the consumer thing that both you and Robert have talked about. Like, I like that Sony seems a little more honest and forthright. Last year, when the PSN happened, Jack Trenton came out and he said, "We fucked up, our bad, we're going to listen to you, the consumers, more often."
Did he really say fucked up?
I know, his face said fucked. His mouth may have said something else, but his face definitely said, "We fucked up bad." And I really liked that this year, at least at the, I mean, who knows, maybe they don't actually stick to any of this, but at least at the press conference, they made it seem like we actually are doing what we said and that we're listening to you from now on. So you guys made this big stink about all these features on the Xbox One, and he did it with class. He never actually said, "Unlike Microsoft, we won't have XYZ that you have all told us you don't like." He said, "We're not going to have this," smile, winky face.
I do think that the difference is, you know, Sony is, of course, a Japanese company, and they have a different approach. You know, they apologized, whereas Microsoft is very Western, like, here it is, take or leave it, this is the best. They just don't back down.
But they could have, you know what I mean? But, like, Microsoft could have at least addressed and tried to explain certain things. Like, they could have said, this is why we're doing this, we're not going to apologize, but this is why we're doing it and why we think it's better. They didn't even talk about the things that have been really controversial, and to me, that's cowardly.
Confused about it as well.
Yeah.
And to me, that was very similar to kind of the Wii U. Like the message that got across was just this very confusing. You know, the average consumer didn't probably understand that.
And, right. And I.
That's not good when you're asking for $500.
No. And that's, I mean, Jeremy, I hear what you're saying about $100 is not that big a difference, unless you want to go buy two games, because then it is a big difference, because I could buy the PS4 and two games, as compared to buying, you know, the Microsoft X-Bone piece of crap box.
No, it's true, and I agree with you. I mean, if you have another alternative there that's $100 less, that has to be a factor. But just in terms of people looking at a price tag, just divorced from everything else, people looking at a price tag for a game console of $500 and saying it's a complete deal breaker because it's $500.
Here's what I think Microsoft could actually do themselves a favor. One of the writers for Edge magazine, and I don't remember which one, but he said in his article about in the one that we picked up at the convention, he said in his article that really what the Xbox One is doing is competing with the full entertainment systems that are more like things that Apple would put out, as opposed to competing in the gaming console industry. And I actually feel like the problem is that Microsoft wants to try and straddle both those bridges, but I'm not sure you can. Like, $500 for a full entertainment system that does your music and your movies and your streaming and your TV, like, yeah, that would make a lot of sense. That'd be a really great price for that, and maybe it does casual gaming, and that would be a really sensible thing to get for a single person or for a household. But trying to make it a both, I don't think works as well. And that's part of why is because of all the DRM stuff that nobody likes. But the other part of it is that you're trying to put too many things into one system, and I'm not sure there's as much innate cohesion as they think there is between those two things. So between the fact that I don't want a big entertainment console kind of device, and the fact that I find Sony to be much more sincere in their honesty and in their willingness to listen to consumers, and the fact that they actually seem like they are trying to support independent gamers, like they gave the Bastion guys a bunch of money to
Transistor.
to make that game, and the fact that they've got a whole program built into the PS4 that allows you to develop levels and games so that they can later, you know, if they look at it and it's getting a lot of hits, they could come to you and be like, hey, we want to fund you to make this a real game. Whereas Xbox just said, oh, well, we've always supported independent gaming. Really, when? Like, you don't always support independent gaming. You steal a lot of shit, but you don't actually support independent gaming. So I just feel like
they did. I think they did with the Indie Arcade. Although before they killed that.
Right. I mean, they do sometimes, but then they always end up finding a way to fuck it up. And their statement when they came out on stage is, we've always been the biggest supporters of independent gaming. That's just not true. I mean, that's just blatantly not true. So between all those things...
They could say through Windows.
then. I mean, I just feel like if I had to... It's a consumerist market, right? And if I have to give my money to one company or another... At this point, at this juncture, I'd rather give it to Sony. The final nail in the coffin is that I actually like Halo. That's the only, you know, frat boy type game I play. And Bungie has now paired up, but who originally created Halo has now paired up with Sony. So for me as a Halo gamer who will miss the shit out of Halo, like that to me is the final, I'm going to go get a PS4. But honestly, with the lack of robustness of games that were available for these upcoming systems, which is not their fault, it's because the tech isn't totally solidified, so the games aren't quite sure where they're going to go with that. But of everything Sean and I like ran around and looked at and played, and everything we did at the Nintendo booth, I'm actually really inclined to go out and buy a Wii U right now and not buy either an Xbox or a Sony machine for, you know, probably a year, and then I'll probably get a PS4 eventually. But I'd rather go get a Wii U because Donkey Kong's coming out. It looks amazing. And the new Smash Brothers is coming out. And It's got Mega Man and the Wii U Fit Trainer, which is freaking hilarious. And she looks way overpowered. But yeah, no, I'd rather go get, I mean, if I had to go spend something, my money on something right now, I'd rather go buy a Wii U than pre-order a PS4. But I would certainly take a PS4 over an Xbox One.
Blue.
Well, you know, for me, I gotta say, this past generation, I was a Microsoft guy. I just a couple of weeks ago picked up a PS3 for the first time. I've for the rest of the generation, I've been using the 360 as my high-end hardware. And the Wii U, or the regular Wii for Nintendo games. And, you know, towards the end of the life cycle, you know, I mean, I had the falling out with Zune, and, you know, I had Xbox Live Gold for a while, and I did not really feel the need to re-up it. And that kind of put, I must admit, you know, even though I'm not a big online gamer, that did push me away towards Sony a bit, because with Sony you have the PS Plus, and that's free games as opposed to just having to pay for the online, which, quite frankly, I'm sorry, there's no fucking excuse for having to pay for Netflix on top of the subscription account. And, you know, I mean, like I said, I picked up a PS3 because, you know, I don't need to have a $60 a year subscription to use all that shit. I mean, moving on to, you know, the PS4 or whatever. You know, Sony hit two huge motherfucking grand slams at E3, you know, of course, with the DRM and with the price difference. And, you know, Jeremy, I know you were saying, you know, $100 isn't that big of a difference, but I can kind of give you an example of how there is a big difference. Look at the 3DS and the Vita. 3DS is pounding the tar out of the Vita because it is so much less. It's like, what, $140 now? Whereas the Vita is still, you know, if you're lucky, you can get it for $200 with a bundled with a game, but most of the time it's still $250 or $300. And that has been the big thing that has weighed down the Vita. And, I mean, they've given up way too much space to Nintendo to, you know, with the 3DS. Because of that price, if both systems were the same price, I think the Vita would be a lot more popular. But when you see, you know, $140, you can get, you know, two or three good Nintendo games. Or
I have to say, I do think it's a matter of software too, because Nintendo has their big titles for that, and Vita, you know, they brought out Call of Duty, which last year at E3 they expected to be their showcase title, and we all know that was a huge pile of shit. And you know, there are some quality Vita, the Killzone coming out for Vita is really good. There are some quality titles, but the ones that are, you know, the full retail releases are kind of few and far between.
And I think it's also, Robert, I think it's also the reliability thing, because even, I mean, the, like, I think I was thinking about this at the, because we always joke about Nintendo fanboys, mm-hmm. but I think that's why Nintendo is able to hold on to so many people, because they're consistent and they're really reliable, and they're really consistently reliable. So you know that, like, you know, like as not, it's going to be a rarity if a Zelda or a yes. Mario game is not a good game, yeah. even if it's a little, you well, know,
except for Yoshi.
Well, right, no, every now and then, okay? yeah. But, like, you know it's going to be a little juvenile, but definitely reliably good. Yes. Whereas a lot of the other stuff, it's like, every now and then you have a good thing come out for the Vita, but a lot of it really isn't that good. I think that makes it hard to commit to that system then.
Mm-hmm. And a lot of it is ports as well. Yeah. I mean, that's another problem. It's like, it's almost like a chicken and the egg kind of thing. It's like the Vita not getting any software because of it's, you know, the price too much not selling, or is it the other way around, you know?
Yeah, I think one of our readers had mentioned that, and that, I think it's a really good point that I'd like to see Sony nip in the bud and maybe pump some money into, you know, software production. I think that would pay off and more systems sold, and then other people, you know, that may start to get the ball rolling and other development teams on board.
Can I just mention really briefly that I dissent from that opinion, from that narrative that there sure. are no games for the Vita?
You didn't say no.
You guys said that. There are few games, no games, no good games.
It's much more rare for a good game to come out on the Vita, and it's much more likely to have something that doesn't work that well.
I love Soul Sacrifice, Jeremy.
Hey, I've been playing a ton of Soul Sacrifice.
Good for you.
I have been, actually, this past week. I wasn't going to talk about
Project
Awesome,
though, has me in its sights. totally. Yeah.
So there's some good stuff out there. And that's just generally, I guess, my opinion about this in general. It's not that $100 isn't a lot of money. I don't have $100 to be thrown around. I don't want that to be the narrative either, that Jeremy's got a lot of money and he's okay spending $500. I am okay spending $500 because I believe that the value proposition is there for a console, to be a platform for you to play games on for however long, however many years. But I mean, realistically, I think it's a potentially a problem. People look at the price first and say, well, I wish that number were lower, therefore it sucks. and that's something that those companies have to deal with. It's not my problem, but the perception and the actual, you know, the content or the value proposition of the product, I think those are two different things. And what these companies are trying to do, and they're doing it with the Vita, Nintendo's not lowering the price on the Wii U. Microsoft came out with a $500 console. They are charging what they can to pack in as much value as they can into that platform and help people to see that. I think I don't want to say it's a proven fact, but it is a pretty common rule of thumb that the less you pay for something, the less you value it. And I think these companies want their products to be high value propositions.
Okay. To defend my position, Jeremy, what was the Vita's last AAA game?
Define AAA.
Superior game.
I don't know. I mean, I paid $40 for Soul Sacrifice. I mean, that's a AAA price.
Okay. That right? might not be AAA to everybody.
Okay.
I'll take it, though.
Okay.
What about on 3DS?
What am I playing right now? Okay, the game that I'm playing right now that I'm going to be talking about a little bit later, Animal Crossing. Animal Crossing New Leaf.
Yeah, which just came out. Donkey Kong Country Returns 3D.
I don't really know about that as a AAA game.
Hey, yeah. Well, I mean, if it's as solid as the Wii game, that was a good...
I think the concept of AAA is a little bit slushy at this point. And I think that's something that we've wanted from developers for a long time, is something that's not like, you know, a grade A or a grade F experience. I mean,
something
I think
that has universal appeal.
Okay, universal appeal to
the
me.
System is, must...
And quality. Yeah, yeah. A near killer app.
I like Blue's definition. A system must. Something that you must own for that mm-hmm. platform.
But I don't think a lot of people, that's why Soul Sacrifice, I don't think for a lot of people that's a system must.
I don't disagree with that.
I think probably is by definition of system must, I think probably the last really ultra mega huge Vita game was Persona 4 Golden.
Yeah.
Yeah. I can get on board with that, yeah.
Okay. So, I'm just saying it's been a while.
I gotta say, that was... That was a really good game.
I take it back. The last must-own game for the Vita was Guacamelee.
Guacamelee! I have to say, I think that's why the system is so important, because, like, everybody's must-have game is going to vary a little bit, and I think that's why... And actually, I didn't realize that the Wii U price was still as high as it is. It's $350. Honestly, given that, I probably would buy a PS4 instead, only because I'm getting the ability to play a bunch of games. I mean, not this second, down the road.
You just did a 180.
I know. Well, I didn't do a 180. I still stand by... No. Fuck that. But I'm saying that the price, I do think, like Jeremy keeps bringing up the price point and how that might make a difference. I think that that's those two things, is that the system has to be really solid, and
Wait,
that the price
Jeremy's
point...
point that price point isn't that much of a big deal?
My point is that the price point should not be the defining factor, but it is in the popular narrative, though.
The other thing about the PS4 is if you want to get the PS4i, that's going to be an additional $60, which, you know, is almost the equivalent to the Kinect. So
yeah, and that's
when you
thing.
Put I that mean, in there, there's a difference of
that's true, although I don't
Only
want
five people are going to buy the camera anyways.
Yeah, I don't want the camera. I want
two of which are on this podcast.
Yeah, I bought the camera.
But I'm saying the fact that the system needs to be solid and the price needs to be something that's affordable, because the thing that really then is going to make the deciding point for everyone instead of money or whatever is the games. Because, like, you know, you guys can't agree on what your number one AAA game is, and I think everybody's that way.
Sure.
And so I think that's why it's important for the system to be solid and not overpriced, because that way people can make decisions based on the games they want to play, not based on the price point, not based on... You know what the system is.
And I would even go further to say it's not the games that people want to play, quote unquote, but the games that the market wants to play. So that's going to be sports games. That's going to be
Then there's two different markets, Jeremy.
Well, that's the thing.
Dude, bro, Call of Duty shooters?
Yeah, exactly. Then the shooters, so that's the thing, right? And Microsoft has an edge in terms of mind share. Like, oh, they have Halo. And hey, guess what they unveiled? Literally, it's at E3, you know, throwing off his cloak with old Master Chief there. So,
but I won't get it for that. You know what I mean?
Well, but because people will. The market will.
That market might, but since there's been this slow merging crossover potential between PC gamers to console, there is a whole nother market of people who right now are more PC gamers than console gamers, who are more invested in either JRPGs or RPGs, or and not so much the bro duty kind of shooters.
Maybe. Anyway, Blue, what is your thought on this question?
Well, I mean, looking at the two, I mean, I was not that impressed with the Xbox One game lineup. Forza 5? Mm-hmm. It came out a little bit after that conference that it's not going to have nighttime driving, it's not going to have weather effects or anything. And to me, those are like two things that I really would expect or want from a next-gen Forza title. I mean,
is that a deal breaker for you? Night driving?
Well, I mean, it's not that big of an upgrade as it stands. I mean, it's going to be prettier, but you know, I mean, let's face it, it's not. I still have plenty to do in Forza 4, and I mean, if I'm being perfectly honest, I don't think there's going to be a Forza 5 Sailor Moon Camaro around anytime soon. So there's really no.
Rift 2 has night driving. I don't really care for it.
Well, you know,
like same
I mean,
tracks, different.
You know, yeah, I mean, I'd have to take a more serious look at Grid 2, but you know, I mean, I've liked the Forza game that I've played. You know, Horizon was really good, and Horizon had night driving as well. And it's, I think somebody's said that it's almost looking like, you know, no night driving, no weather is like a design choice from Turn 10. And it really is looking like that. I mean, let's face it, Project Gotham 3, which was a launch title for the Xbox 360. I believe that had rain in it. I know that had night driving. And same with Project Gotham 4 sometime later. I mean, it's, you know, and, I mean, looking back at the PS2, Gran Turismo 3 had it. So it's like, why the fuck are you standoffish about doing this? It's kind of like a no-brainer.
Moving on, we got a question.
Moving on.
Picadillo, who asked...
Great name.
Yes. I imagine it half is Pikachu, half armadillo.
No, it's a Picadillo.
Okay.
Picadillo?
Oh, go.
No!
It's like a stew, I think, actually.
No, a Picadillo is a... Oh, God, like, hold on.
I think what you're thinking of as a Picadillo is like a social foible or something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think a Picadillo is actually...
From Dragon Ball Z?
Yeah. It's over 9,000!
Picadillo asks, what was your biggest surprise at E3 and biggest disappointment?
Can I just really quickly give just my knee-jerk answer, which is that both of these things were one thing. And I've actually already mentioned it. Do you guys remember when they showed that Wanderer in the desert and it's like the future... And he's walking, and suddenly, like this, he blows on this whistle or something. This giant thing comes out of the sand. Oh my God! It's Dune. It's like Dune. It's pushing my Dune button so hard. Oh my God! And then it's the Master Chief.
Yes.
That was the biggest surprising disappointment of the entire thing for me. That's not the actual answer I want to give, but that's the first thing that comes right to mind.
All right.
So I guess that's my answer then.
Yeah, I guess that's your answer. Mine's sort of the same. Mine is also like my biggest surprise and biggest disappointment was the which is also something I already mentioned, was the lack of more games that felt complete and fully developed for the upcoming generation of consoles. And I know that that's because the techs, you know, they're still figuring stuff out. So it's not like I don't understand why. But this was the first E3 where I showed up and I was kind of like, eh, there's really not a lot to look at. I mean, on the mega side, there's a lot of cool indie stuff to look at. And that's where I ended up spending a lot of my thought and time. But there wasn't that much big AAA kind of shit that really grabbed my attention.
For me, I was going to say that it's no secret that the team at Volition, they're really good at crafting these fun sandboxes for players to muck around in. And Red Faction, and to a lesser extent, the Saints Row series have been pretty enjoyable experiences for me. But I think I devalue the Saints Row series because of its reliance on potty humor. I thought mm-hmm. they kind of take away the dildo weapons and the dick
jokes. I just can't get interested in it, man. I just can't.
Yeah, I think the game would be pretty generic without those, you know, fun, but, yeah. but not, you know, over the top. So I really had low expectations for Saints Row 4 other than, you know, a steady stream of profanities. And so I sat down. I don't think I discussed this with Sage. We sat down. I played the opening sequence, and you're the leader of the Saints. You're your player. You win the presidency. And so you're walking down this regal hallway to give a speech, and you're interrupted by three people who offer this dialogue option. You can choose left and right to trigger. And mechanically, I mean, it's totally cliche. There's nothing new. But what surprised me was the writing. The first person asks you if you'd rather eliminate cancer or end world hunger. And sure, the obligatory profanity is here. You know, the guy's holding up a sign or a piece of paper that reads, fuck cancer. But when I chose that option, I expected this kind of foul-mouthed punchline. But instead, the protagonist, I think he said, well, cancer had a good run. And then he signs his name proudly on it. And it's a real kind of simple moment, but it was something that kind of stuck with me the rest of the day. You know, I probably defeated countless end bosses, saved the world, you know, in games. Hundreds
like
of times.
Alfred Lord Tennyson poetry to me.
Yeah, but I'm just kidding. But never has an event really reached a level of satisfaction so quickly. And I thought to be able, you know, this fantasy to wipe out a disease, it's probably affected people first or secondhand. It's just this creative little fantasy. And considering it's one of the first things you do in Saints Row 4, I don't know, it has me looking forward to the game. And I'm hoping that the final build kind of balances, dare I say, sophistication with the scat humor. So, kind of hopeful.
Right.
I thought that was a big surprise for me. My biggest disappointment, as I said before, Microsoft not using the Xbox One to demo software, but PCs with higher specs. That said, I did think, unlike Blue, that Forza looked pretty incredible. I wasn't really bothered by the lack of night or weather because what it did well. But the shame of the show goes...
I'm just a greedy bitch. Don't mind me.
Okay. I think the shame of the show goes to that other racer, Drive Club, which is Sony's free racer. I played about 20 minutes while Sean was going gaga over the Invisibles, and it was bad. I mean, there was draw-in, frame rate that dropped to the 20s, and just a visual output that to me, it kind of paled to existing PS3 games. And I say this because I have somewhat of an expectation. It's being developed by Evolution Studio, who made that, you know, the MotorStorm series, which I really liked. And second place for disappointment goes to Titanfall, as Blue said, for failing to provide a single-player mode. Repeatedly, Vince Zampella, he explained that they just don't, you know, they don't have the manpower for a single-player component, and they don't really want to waste time putting one in. And I just don't want to waste my money on a game without one. So to be honest, Starhawk, the multiplayer, is much of what I think Titan is kind of aiming for, and likely adds a little bit of depth through its base building. And quite honestly, I think I'd rather play that than Titanfall.
For me, I guess. Biggest surprise, I mean, kind of a two-part answer on here. First of all, I mean, $399 PS4, I think that I kind of thought that they'd go maybe $449.
I was planning $600.
I was thinking maybe $449. Or possibly they just go the same route as Microsoft and price it the same way. I did not expect $399. I don't think, judging by the reaction of the live stream, I don't think anybody else did. And
I think it was going to be $350, and then they heard $499, they upped it.
Nah,
well, you know, I was kind of thinking, you don't think that maybe Sony skipped over a Vita price drop because they figured if we hacked another $50 off of the PS4's price, it would have more of a impact.
You know, I was almost certain of a Vita price drop, and here's why. The week before E3, you saw a lot of deals for if you buy a Vita, you get a certain, you know, gift card. Mm-hmm. There were a lot of, you know, like $50 gift card deals, so I was almost certain there was going to be a price drop.
Yeah, that's usually a tall tale sign of price slashing. And big surprise part two. I think Bayonetta 2 turned turned out to be as good, if not better, than what I was expecting. I mean, it's kind of hard to follow a game like that because there's a lot of hype. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of hype for the sequel, and I know, of course, everybody's thinking, bring it on to the 360 and PS3 and whatnot. But,
Lou, you get a prize for being the first person to actually mention something Nintendo said at E3 in this entire show so far. We haven't talked about Nintendo, period. So good for
what,
you.
What did they say?
They said, I'm going to sit out here like Mario. I'm going to talk to you for 30 minutes while you wait for us to say something.
Actually, in real life, in person, that was pretty cool.
I've actually seen, where was I, where Charles Martinet was doing something like that. I mean, yeah, but...
Because he was actually talking to, like, on top of saying just sort of generic Mario things, he was also talking to, like, people in the crowd that he recognized and sort of making jokes about stuff. And, like, yeah, it's kind of kitschy. But again, it's playing to that whole market of people who really like Mario.
What
do you
say?
Who's that I see out of there in the audience? It's Robert Destiny Garland. I like your haircut.
I mean, let's face it. I mean, if you're a hardcore Nintendo fan, wouldn't you want to hear like the voice of Mario say your name just once? I mean, you'd have to like nerdgasm over that.
Yeah, all right. You know, video came out from that. Was there any video of that, actually?
What, that event?
Yeah, standing room only thing with...
I don't know. I don't know that anyone bothered to film before before it's... Well,
I'm
no,
sure
before
somebody
it
did.
You think
you
like, while they were standing
like that,
around?
Just, like, talk live to a room full of people who were really, like, hating it.
You know what was really cool is I met one of the guys from Screw Attack. I think his name was Chad... but the Screw Attack guys were around, and they're actually really cool guys, and they put out that show Gamer Tags, which is where that term I'm always using, Gramer, came from.
Gramer?
Explain it.
Yeah, that was their word that they made up for, like, the frat boy stupid gamer was Gramers. Like, the guy
sounds like older gamers, like they're gray.
Grandpa?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not buying that.
Well, you have to...
I didn't know that you actually said that a lot. Do you say Gramer a lot?
I say it all the time.
It's like, you guys, don't you remember my catchphrase? I say it all the time.
No, it's not.
Acha macha hoocha. Remember?
No, it's not my catchphrase, but I refer sort of disparagingly to frat boys as Gramers all the time.
Screwed Attack is her $10 every time she says it.
I see.
Why do you guys always got to take the nicest, innocent things I say and make them all contorted?
Because I've actually never heard you say that.
I don't remember, to be honest.
I think you guys I say gamer, and you don't hear that I say gramer. I guess I should enunciate it more clearly. Go back, listen to old ones. Okay. You won't. Jeremy definitely won't. We know he doesn't listen to any of them.
I listen to everything. So Blue, you had your biggest... surprise.
Yeah, I think Bayonetta turned out. Bayonetta 2 turned out better than I was expecting it to be. I was thinking that it was going to become the victim of hype because, you know, a lot of people wanted it and it looked like it was getting canceled for a while, but it's back.
Victim of hype. Can I just say victim of hype is my Erasure cover band? Nothing.
Victim of love. I get the joke.
Victim of hype is my
because I'm a Gramer.
Yeah, I'm sorry, Robert, you were saying. Go ahead.
I'm a dirty old Gramer. No, I was worried about Bayonetta on the Wii U platform because, you know, there were obviously some problems porting the software, and I expected like 30 frames per second, but it was 60 and really solid. So hats off to Platinum.
Yeah, I think a lot of people probably said, you know, when Bayonetta 2 was announced is a Wii U exclusive, oh, I am so buying a Wii U for Bayonetta, and it kind of loses
did.
A little
bit. I did.
Sorry.
Well,
you know, I think most people, it's kind of like the generic message board response, and after what I saw, through the E3 videos and whatnot, I think there is a very realistic point that, you know, a realistic possibility that if I pick up a Wii U, Bayonetta 2 will probably be the first or second game that goes into it.
Right. Yep.
But as for biggest disappointment,
you like your new hairstyle, Blue?
It looks okay.
Soccer momish to me.
Yeah, maybe not quite so Sarah Palin-y, perhaps.
Yeah.
How does it cover all of her naughty bits if it's a short haircut?
It kind of looked like it was coming from her armpits in one of the promotional photos.
Bayonetta is a French name, isn't it? I mean, isn't it French for armpit hair?
But as far as biggest disappointment goes, I don't know. I mean, it's nothing's really super jumping out at me. I guess maybe the fact I guess at the time, I don't know if I'd quite call it a disappointment, just kind of like a, oh, tee-hee, whatever, was the Halo announcement not having, like, Halo 5 in the title.
They didn't announce any title, did they? Didn't they just show him and it was...
I think after the conference, they started referring to it as Halo 5, but it's like, I was watching the live stream and, you know, right as the Halo logo came onto the screen, I guess Microsoft or whoever was running the cameras or directing or whatever pan to like a crowd shot with the Halo logo small on the screen. Like you couldn't quite make out that it didn't have like the Halo 5 logo. And I was thinking, oh, great. You're just kind of making a generic announcement.
I didn't even see the logo. I was so distraught at the time. I was just like, I can't believe that's
Halo. For the people watching at home, did you hear the hecklers on Battlefield 4?
No, when the audio went out?
Yeah. The second
one. Oh, my God.
It was embarrassing.
It was, embarrassing.
Oh, the poor guy, come back.
Because he looked so upset because, you know, and the crowd, to be fair, they were nice the first time, but then when it happened the second time, they were all mad. But the guy, right before he started to leave the stage, was like, well, I guess you'll see it later. And he sounded heartbroken and sad. I felt bad for him.
That was kind of a weird moment. That has to suck.
Just being up in front of millions of people and then having something like that happen. Right. And you're the face of the company.
And then when Assassin's Creed during the PS4 just kind of crapped out and they pulled.
I feel like they transitioned right off of that. Maybe it was just me, but I felt like they just cut right into the next thing. And it was like, well, I guess that was abrupt. But at least they weren't sitting there with their stuff hanging out on stage.
Well, that one was a little awkward because, you know, they were cutting it and then it kind of faded to black. And then there was a few seconds of downtime. That downtime.
The guy should have been like, woo!
Yeah. Did a Ubisoft, Plants vs.
Robert, Zombies 2. Did you tell the guys the story of how I ended up down on the floor for the Sony press conference?
No.
Robert! Robert smiled exactly two times, I think, during E3. And the first one was for sushi at the Sony press conference. So we got there, don't grumble, you know it's true. So we got there, and Robert went inside because he had a thing and I didn't, to go see if he could find anybody to get me in. So I ended up waiting in the, like, generic people line of people who don't actually have their invitation.
The non-PS Plus line.
Right, pretty much. And when I finally got in, it was, like, much later, and I was like, shit, I'm never going to find Robert. So I got in, and I ate a little bit of food. And I jumped in with one of the lines that was sort of next to the gate, thinking that they were the outside, the, you know, thinking they were the lower people who were going to go in after everyone else. And they went in first, and it turned out that the line that I was in was the video camera, like, people. So it was all the people who needed a spot down on the floor because they were going to be video filming the entire thing. And so I ended up, like, I didn't want to be down on the floor because I knew I wouldn't be able to see. So I ended up in this, like, gated area that's just behind all the video cameras with all these, like, snooty-looking investor people. And halfway through the show, I realized I'm the only media person in this box. The rest of these people are probably actually investors because none of them were taking notes. None of them had cameras. And every time I'd, like, click a picture, they all kind of looked at me like, what are you even doing here? I was just like, whoops, la-di-da, I'm not supposed to be here. Oh, well. But unlike Ubisoft, I did not get kicked out, which was nice.
They actually.
But during Ubisoft, we sat behind.
Not Ubisoft. EA.
We sat in front of the in front of the Cess, who would not stop talking. That guy.
He would not stop talking. But I liked his jokes. Yes. Robert didn't like any of his jokes, and I thought he was funny.
I think he orgasmed on the back of my neck too. We got some G4 juice.
From one bald man to another.
Yes. I forgot what he got all excited for.
I don't know. I
just
remember
because he's Adam Sessler and he's on like 3 ounces of cocaine at any given moment.
I think it was 3 pounds. Jesus, yeah. That guy would not stop talking.
Pickle
they could
two,
replace
maybe?
Caffeine Man with him if they ever needed to.
Cocaine Man.
Mr. Caffeine.
Yeah, did you see some of the videos of him during E3?
I had to listen to it, I'm telling you, Blue. Why would I want to watch him? Jesus.
Get back home and load up YouTube, Adam Sessler. Oh, gosh.
Okay. Anyway, I think it's time for some impressions.
Didn't we have one more question, Rob?
No.
It was about swag and with Sean here. Somebody wanted to know, I guess I should look that up, maybe you guys can tell me who the name was, but somebody wanted to know something about swag, good swag. I gave all
Best
my swag
piece
to
of swag you snagged.
I gave all my swag to Sage.
So you only had like a little bit, and you kept your metal batarang.
Yes, I kept two things, an Arma 3 shirt and a metal batarang / beer opener.
Which Sage got for you, and your lanyard,
Well, I think that still doesn't excuse you from being the biggest swag hag of the bunch.
I'm not the biggest swag hag.
Who is the biggest
swag? Swag?
I don't think any of us are swag hags because we're all more sort of into.
That's not an option.
I'm swag hag because of a lack of opportunity.
Who was the biggest swag hag?
But no, swag hag is. No.
There it is.
Three of us. Who had the most? John.
But that's not. But swag hag. That the use of that term automatically excludes all of us because none of us go to booths trying to get swag. Like,
fine. Who's the biggest normal hag?
The what?
I'm just kidding.
Who brought home the most shit?
I don't think that's reasonable either.
Okay. We'll let that. We'll let that go unanswered.
We'll leave it out there.
It was Sage.
It wasn't me. That's not
like
reasonable.
50 t-shirts. I gave my t-shirts to the homeless because I like seeing them plug Disney.
Robert, that's I had 50 awesome. T-shirts because you gave me a bunch of t-shirts, so you giving me shit to make me the swag hag is not count.
You know what? You got school.
I would have given them to the homeless.
You
but
gave me
wouldn't
shirts.
Wouldn't the homeless people probably flip them on eBay or sell them because they're probably kind of
I don't know if they have an internet connection to eBay.